Austin, and I'm thrilled to be here with you all. I wish I would have had the opportunity to interact with you more this week, but so be it. So I'm excited to get to field some questions to this great group of people here about singleness in the church. And a lot of you have submitted questions. I think we have about 30 questions. So unfortunately, I don't think we're going to get through all of them. However, I'm going to try to group some of them together. And hopefully, we'll be able to have 10, 15 minutes at the end for some live Q&A, where if you have a question that you thought of or wish would have been asked but wasn't and want to make sure we touch on it, you'll hopefully have the opportunity to do that. And then if there is something burning, like as someone's responding to something and you think of this nuance or whatever and you want to pipe in and add that, you can do so. I'll try to repeat things that are said back there just so for the benefit of the recording. And then after I pray, I'm going to have each person introduce themselves, name, age, and family church history as is relevant to the discussion. So let me pray for us and then we'll get started. Heavenly Father, it brings me great joy to be in a room full of people who are hungry for your word. Amen. And to have that vibrancy and that fervency reverberating throughout this room. It's really amazing. And I pray, Father, that today as this group of people sit and hear and engage with this topic of singleness and marriage as it relates to the church and the work of the church, that our hearts would be open to hearing from you, from your word, from our brothers and sisters. We ask that you would grant insight and speak to the needs of our hearts, Father, as we know that you love to do. So we submit this time to you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
So my name is Austin Lapp, as I said. I'm actually married. Have been married for a little over 5 years. I moved to Boston 4 years ago, and we call this our home now. We have two children. I got married when I was, 24. So, and my wife was 27 when we got married. And I grew up in a conservative Anabaptist community that did not teach much on singleness. And so it wasn't really something that I thought about a lot as a life calling. So I'm excited to hear even from our brothers and sisters here today. I think that's it. I'm 29, by the way. So,
My name is Jeff Todd. I'm twice as old as him, and you can do the math. Plus one. And I have been single my whole life. I became a Christian in 1989. You can do the math. I'm a math teacher. I like saying that. I've grappled with issues of singleness in the church. I was part of the International Church of Christ movement. Dominic is also, call him out there. And we were there's a robust singles ministry within the Church of Christ, but it's pretty recognized that there's not a role for single people. There are no single people involved in leadership of the church. And not just in ordained leadership, but broadly in staff members, unless you might work in the office. And that's always been difficult for me. I found a different and better attitude here at Follows Away about singleness. I've been here for about 4 years, four and a half, something like that. I think about 12 years ago, I really struggled through this issue of being content with being single, happy to be single. I've gone back and forth about whether it's a blessing or not, but I'd say for the last 12, 13, 14 years, can't remember exactly when, I've just decided it's something. I'm happy with celibacy, and it serves God well, and I'm content in that. That's good enough.
I'm David, I'm 31, also single. I was born and raised in an older Amish family in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. And left that when I was 23, moved to Greece, spent some time there with the youth organization called Youth with a Mission, or YWAM. Was there for 4 years, moved back to the States to begin school, ended up transferring to Sattler, and I'm now a history student there. I'll finish in December, so on my last year of a four-year degree at Sattler. And also a member here at Followers of the Way, which has probably been the most, as a single person, the place where I've found the most room for singleness, a place to be, live as a single person in terms of church experience.
I'm Chloe Milioni, Matthew's daughter. I am actually not single, I'm in a relationship, but it's fairly recent and have spent, wrestled through a lot of like, what does it look like, especially for a single woman, to serve the church. So I've actually not been living at home for the majority of the last 3 years. I've kind of been back and forth. I spent some time in Uganda doing ministry here. I have an apartment close to my parents. So yeah, I've been at Followers of the Way. I mean, my family moved here when I was 11. So all of my years trying to wrestle through what singleness looks like and how to effectively serve in that phase of life.
I'm Matthew Milioni, Chloe's dad. I asked Austin if he had the right person for this. I was 17 when I started dating my girlfriend, soon to be wife, and we married when I was 19 and she was 17. And I've been having children ever since. However, what I will say is that because I became very serious about the church at a young age, I recognized very early on the way that the Apostle Paul in particular and the model of Jesus himself were talking and addressing the issues of singleness did not find a good voice in a lot of the people that I was around, and it's something that bothered me early on. I also became interested in the early church fairly early in my journey, and there I found kind of like an echo of the way that Paul talked about these things, where the church could have a very different view about singleness. I spent quite a few years in the charity movement, which was very, very family first, and there were some good, really good things for me out of that environment and that teaching. But it left a lot of my single brothers and sisters kind of in a lurch, where they were either self-imposed or communally imposed, with some kind of feeling like they were second-class Christians if they didn't have a family. And then also seeing those things within Anabaptist communities, where you had, you know, 35 and 40-year-old men and women who were in youth groups, because youth didn't mean youth, it just meant unmarried. And seeing some of those uncomfortable things over the years has caused me to really try to give voice to what I think the scriptures have to say about this issue, and that is, in short, that singleness is a very, very important thing for the church. And it's not something to be avoided at all costs, that it is a meaningful way to live if we approach it correctly.
All right. So the reason I chose Matthew is we need a pastoral and fatherly voice in this conversation. And I actually heard your sermon, Care for Christianity, after I was married, and was like, I wish I would have heard that when I was 17 years old. Not right. Because I didn't want to be married, but because I feel like I would have used my single years more fruitfully.
Right.
So I think we'll kick it off here with a question that falls in the category of what I would call marriage idolatry. And you touched on it a little bit, Matthew, and people could select if they wanted to address the question to an individual or to anyone. And I think we have three questions in this category, and two of them were to anyone, one was to you, Matthew, so I don't know if you want to kick us off on that. But basically, so I'll just read a couple of them here. So some circles elevate being married over staying single. How do you make the two more equal, lest it create some kind of stress for singles who may be older? Or this is another one, how do you balance the scales of the calling of marriage and singleness, and not elevate one or the other as holier than the other? And then a sub-question here too is it correct to give the manhood or womanhood card to married people but not to single people of the same age and maturity?
Yeah, they're good questions, and I think they come out of our cultures that are not handling these issues with a lot of nuance and depth. I think it's a complicated issue because of this, right? The garden narrative, the creation narrative, starts with Adam alone, and the way we begin the track of humanity is it's not good for a man to be alone. Like this innate desire for completion in a partner is something that seems to be built into the human structure. I think that where Jesus and the Apostle Paul, two of the greatest luminaries in the Christian faith, are outliers in regards to that creation narrative, I think what they're doing is creating a space where there's a new way to be. That in the church, there's a new kind of completion to be had. There's old prophecies that talk about she that had children will be barren, the barren will bear many children. Like this kind of like role reversal happens as a part of the prophetic element talking about the coming kingdom under Jesus. And a part of that role reversal, a part of that great equalization, is the value of the single life, because it's not single in and of itself. It's single with purpose. For me, when I read through these texts, the passage that stands out to me more than anything else is Paul's injunction to his people, I would have you without carefulness, brethren. And the way that Paul's viewing the kingdom and the ministry that he has set before his life, he doesn't have time for a family. And I don't think that that implies a lack of fulfillment, a lack of real genuine love and connection in his life. I don't think that it implies loneliness. I think it implies a kind of focus that isn't afforded. And his theology about marriage and singleness develops out of those themes. And so we need to return and get back to thinking about these issues as a real option, not as they're foisted on you by the world and the environment, whether you can or can't find a mate, that there's something more about a choice to live a life a certain way. I can tell you that in spite of my long-term marriage, what I have tried to do is teach my children as they grow. I mean, they're growing up in a big family. We love family life. Family's wonderful. My children are very, very, very fulfilling to me. I love them, and now I'm having grandchildren, and there are joys that there's no other way to have them but with children and grandchildren and family. And those things are beautiful, and they're created by God to be that way. But there is a whole nother way to live that has a different kind of beauty, a different set of benefits and rewards and opportunities that are not afforded to that other class of people. And so So I've tried to condition my children that this is not a default. It's not a well, if you're lucky, you'll get married, and if you're not, you'll be stuck alone as a spinster. It's, hey, you choose what you want to do with your life. Where do you want your focus to be? Do you want your focus to be on ministry in the kingdom? Part of the problem is this, and I don't want to overrun these comments because these other brothers have a lot more to say, but part of the problem is that I think that our single people have been left without work to do. And the church is not in places doing things where there's lots of work for our single people to do. And so if you're stuck in a place without a lot of ministry, without a lot of opportunity, and you're just sitting twiddling your thumbs with nothing to do, and you don't have a family, that's really depressing and lame. But if you have something to engage yourself into, to pour your life and your energy and your money and your resources and your time and your talents into, then a single life can be the best option. And it would be something that you would actually choose over having a family, at least for a time. So those are some of my thoughts.
Anyone else have something to add on to that? Kind of the more corrective to the issue.
I forgot what the questions are already.
Basically, like, how do we deal with the imbalance within many churches where married people are given greater value or esteem or honor or maturity?
Right. So I think it's culturally driven too. I think within church circles in particular, like in the world, and I came from the world, singlehood's like like you can be a player and
right.
go out and have girlfriends, boyfriends, anything you want all the time, as many as you want. So like singleness is kind of a, you know, for some people a badge of, I don't know, something I wouldn't want to wear anymore, right? But I think, so in the church, there's always this idea that, you know, you have to fulfill this kind of, like, Adam was alone and he needed a partner, he got married, right? And I do agree with Matthew about this idea of, like, there's prophecy from Jesus, from Isaiah,
right.
specifically, that talks about a new time in the church.
Right.
And there's, we have this idea that we throw about from Verdine's book, Anatomy of a Hybrid, of a where I learned it about an idea of a progressive grace instead of a flat theology. Like, God created this to be this way. He said, barrenness is a curse in the Old Testament. You can't get around that, right? But as we go through and we see Isaiah saying, blessed is the barren woman whose tent is enlarged. She will be the parent of the mother of many people in Isaiah 54. And in Isaiah 56, we have the idea of the barren, the eunuch that says, I'm but a dry tree. And right in these sections, which are full of this prophecy about Jesus in a future time, we see the seeds of the value of singleness, and the idea of bearing fruit and building a family means building a family in the church.
Right.
And the children, I would say many children, that I feel like I have that are not biological children are the investment that I make. And if the church is the bride of Christ and she's being fruitful, then there's a huge role for single people to be involved in that process of bearing fruit. And it's a different kind of parenting and fruitfulness and bearing of fruit, but something that single people have a lot of time to devote themselves to. If they'll embrace that, whether choosing to be single for a time or making a choice for celibacy for life.
All right, we're going to move on. So the next category of question is related to decision making. So, excuse me, if there is this imbalance, how do we now interact with that? How do we think about our own lives? So I'll give a couple questions here. Some of these I'll maybe paraphrase a little bit. One is, my parents want me to get married, but it's not really on my horizon. Is that okay? And is marriage or singleness a choice God gives it to each of us to choose? And these are addressed to anyone. Another is, I consider the desire to serve God to be at odds with the desire to be married, since Paul says, he who is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord, but he who is married cares about the things of the world. 1 Corinthians 7:32. I suspect this position to be mistaken. Would you agree to any extent? Am I mistaken, and why?
I think it's different. Like, you're not, I mean, so it, so Paul says a couple of things that Paul says. He says, better to be single than married, mm-hmm. all right? And he also says in other places, it better be dead than alive. But we don't advocate death, right? Like, it's not like it says that's better to, because being married has advantages if you want to be an elder, because you're not going to be an elder if you're single, or a bishop, right? And similarly for deacons, like, there are roles that require marriage if you're going to stick with the Bible. And so these roles don't put that show that there is value to being married. But I tell you, I have a more time than he has on my hands, right? And I have 40 hours a week of work, maybe, and I have whatever, 7 times 8 hours of sleep, 56 hours of sleep, and the rest of my time I can use however I choose, and I choose to use it to help build the kingdom. And I don't have to worry about, I mean, I have an aging parent, I have other family responsibilities, there are other things in my life, but how I use my time is totally available, and I can choose to not be distracted by things of the world and focus on the church.
think one thing that the questions get at is the idea that there is a decision to be made, right? And that goes against the thing that singleness can become in the church, which is just, it's that waiting period until you do find a relationship or you find a marriage partner. And I think the way that Paul talks about it is much more in the terms of you make a decision about what's your why in life, what are you going after, and then is marriage going to serve that? Is singleness going to serve that? And so the decision that you make is based on what you see and how you see yourself serving the kingdom. And I think that's a completely different way to frame singleness versus marriage. And I think in order to live a single life that is fulfilled and is full of intention, it will have to be a decision. Maybe you know that you want to be single for a lifetime. Maybe you know that you would like to get married at some point, but you're single now. I think in either of those situations, you can still say, I'm single today. What does that mean? Let me see it as something that's a gift from God rather than just something that I'm stuck in for the time being. And for me, I think the one thing that really serves that is terminology, being really intentional with the terms that you, at least for me, celibacy is a term that I embrace, rather than, well, if you're a single person and you're a Christian, I think it's the only way, right? So you could also say, well, sexual abstinence or but that's a term of negation. You're missing something. I'm missing something. I'm unfulfilled because I can't have this thing. No, celibacy, it's a gift that comes as a part of the gift of singleness. And as a Christian, it's the only way for me to be single and be faithful. So terms are important.
I agree that celibacy is a better term than singleness. Mm-hmm. I don't think you find either of them in the Bible, but here. If you find celibacy, you won't find singles. So I find talk about virgins and stuff like
virgin
that.
Yeah, virgin would be that.
Or eunuch.
Eunuchs, yeah.
I'm going to insert another question here that's related to this. So what I hear you saying is it's a choice that we have to make, and we can make. We have that privilege, that freedom to make. So another question is, how does a single person come to a place of being focused while also being open to marriage? How do you live intentionally without essentially vowing to singleness?
How have you done that?
I think that's going for Chloe, yeah.
Well, that was my life for a few years. The way that I thought about it is this, I feel like the same that I would think about it as a married woman to some extent, and that if I vow to serve God and to serve the church, it's just a matter of evaluating what does that look like. And so for me, it was like, these are my passions. This is how I feel like I can serve the church and the world around me. And so just really fully embracing that with everything that I had. So for me, that looked like getting involved in pregnancy centers and moving around and being support for women in the church that had a bunch of babies and just needed someone to come in and help. But I think for that, it's kind of just, you have to figure out where is my place in the church and kind of evaluate your giftings and where you can serve God and what that looks like. I think my view would just be it's kind of different for different people. But whatever it is, you have the ability and capacity to fully plug in, and so do it is kind of the approach that I've taken.
I think what I've wanted to do with my children, because I've wanted to present this real choice for their life, like you can choose, like these are two valid options for you to walk down. What I've tried to encourage them, and in particular my girls, because I feel like young women are not given enough opportunity to do meaningful work for the kingdom. They feel like, you know, I think in a lot of corners, our young sisters feel like they can be a secretary at a Christian business or do childcare for somebody, and maybe jump in on a trip to town to hand out tracts or something, like, and that's about all that life is for them. And I don't want that for my daughters. If they're not married, if they're not devoting their life to having a husband and children, I want them to do meaningful things for the kingdom and for the gospel. I advocate that Christian women wear coverings on their head so they can prophesy in the world and speak for God. I don't take that lightly, and I don't want my daughters to either. I want them to have meaningful Christian lives and meaningful Christian ministries, whether or not they're married. I think that it's very important that the church teach that married women who have children are properly oriented towards their children and their homes. That's very important to me. But if that's not your obligation, there's a lot of things to be done in the world. And so I haven't wanted to, when my daughters in particular have gotten older and converted and baptized and have their own, I want them to have place in the world to figure out what they want to do. It hasn't been an object of mine to keep Chloe like in a back room somewhere until someone comes calling. I want her to have a full Christian life, and I want her to be engaged in, and she has been. And in fact, what I think in watching how things have played out with her and her older sister too, who is married, is that the young man that became interested in Chloe kept hearing her name everywhere he was going. Like, Chloe was kind of like a rock star. Like, he kept going to these different churches, and people were talking about this Chloe Ann Milioni. He's like, who is this girl? Because she had an active, vibrant ministry. She had been in Kampala. She was doing work there. She had traveled with me in some of my church planning work and was really important in some of the things that we were doing. And that work made room for her that somebody became interested in her life. And so I don't think it's an either or proposition. I think that you can live a meaningful kingdom life, man or woman, in singleness and just devoted to the tasks of ministry. And if your state changes, then it changes. Paul seems to be making those conclusions in 1 Corinthians 7. If you're bound, then be content, whatever state you were called in. If you're bound, be content. But if you get your freedom, rather, then change. If you're single, be content there, and if that changes, then it's okay to change. It's not a sin. Like, these things are movable. They're movable categories in your life, but what's not movable is that you shouldn't be sitting on your hands until some future state. The Christian life is meant to be lived. It's meant to be lived wholly in whatever state you are. And that's one of the beautiful things about the Christian life, is that it's supposed to fill in every gap. It's supposed to be available for every person in every state, for single or married, for slave or free, for any capacity can be a full Christian expression.
So what I hear, I think, addresses a question that came up, and that is it selfish to be single?
Absolutely not.
Well, it can be. You know, it depends on
anything
your heart.
It can be selfish.
It can be selfish and be married, too.
Right.
I mean, I'll say, like, I've met, like, the issue of loneliness came up earlier. I've met a lot of people in lonely that are married that are lonely. A lot of lonely men in marriages because they're just emotionally not available. Mm-hmm. And so, like even these issues, whether married, the same set of issues occur. Mm-hmm. You can be lonely as a single person, and you can be lonely in marriage, and there's probably going to be loneliness in your life. You can be selfish as a single. You can be selfish and be married, but you're probably going to be selfish. So the question is, how much are you going to address it when you see it?
Good words. All right. So there's a number of questions that relate to simply effectiveness. So what does it look like to be an effective individual in the church who's not married? So maybe you can speak to, I'll just throw that out there as a question, like, what are the kinds of activities that single people or celibate people ought to be putting their hand to within the church? And then another question we'll address at some point here is, how can churches create that space for that to happen? Actually, maybe that would be a first, let's go with that question first, actually. What does it look like for the church to create space for singles to engage in meaningful ministry? And kind of a sub-question of that for some of you would be, what have you found to be meaningful in your church situations that have facilitated your ministry as a single individual?
I'll throw in one piece at the beginning, which I don't have much to say about church structure, but if you think about the average Christian church, what is it made up of? It's going to be mostly couples and families, and probably singles are going to be in the minority. And so a piece to begin with, I think, is a view of family life that is different than the American view of family life, the idea of the independent, self-sufficient nuclear family, the American dream, but rather a family life that is open to inclusion for singles in the church, making space for that. I have friends who next week are going on vacation, on a family vacation. They're married, have a few young children. And I have another friend who's single who got invited to go with this family on family vacation. Family vacation for them is not limited to nuclear family. There's this idea that the family of the church is supersedes that. So I think that's a big piece. Mm-hmm.
This is a common answer. We have a video for this. But I think Matthew this spring did a citywide on that talked. I forget the title of it. Do you remember what I'm talking about? Specifically addressing the idea that
there's women in ministry.
Women in ministry, and it goes for men too. But I think that it's harder issue for single women than for single guys. I'm pretty sure. One of his big points there is there are so many needs in the church and in the community that, if you're sitting there waiting for someone to tell you to do what to do, that's part of the problem, right? There is plenty to do. Ideally, it's a church leadership or a local community coming together and being open and feeling like you have the space to say, hey, I feel a little unfulfilled. I have a lot of time on my hands. What productive could I do here? Or go and find it on your own. I think better within the, because doing it on your own, that doesn't engage the community. I think the question is, how do churches create spaces? It's by people in the church making their needs known and not being ashamed to go, you know what, I'm a little unfulfilled right now. I could use some more things in my life that are meaningful ministry. And can you help me find some, because I'm not sure what to do? Are there needs here first in the church that are not being met, right? Take care of the family. And then outside the church, what are some needs that I can, that in the community that I can meet that would help just be compassionate and mercy oriented or helpful?
That message, if you're interested in this this issue in general, or women in ministry in particular, I think it was called Women in Ministry, or Ministry for Women, something like that, and it was a citywide. And what was really interesting about that is that I had sent around a survey to the church, and I asked everybody who would answer the survey, tell me the three times in your life, the three most meaningful times that people have ministered to you in your life. And I didn't have any explanation. The church didn't know I was preaching on. I just sent out this survey. And I got back all these answers, dozens of answers. And I categorized them and read through them when we opened that meeting. And, not a single one of those answers that I got back from the whole church was somebody preached a message and it worked. It really changed my life. Not a single one of them was the brothers made a decision in a brothers meeting that really changed my life. What all of them were was, I was in need, I was hurting, and somebody came and took care of me, somebody visited me when I was sick, somebody gave me counsel when I didn't know what to do. And all of those things are open for all of us to do to one another. They're not leadership kind of stuff. The ministry that matters is the stuff that all of us do to all of us.
I think just to echo what Jeff was saying, if you ask that question, at least for my church, you will get a lot of answers. There have been times when I'm like, oh, what should I be doing? There is an abundance of work. I have never ran out of things to do. I think for our church group here, we have a lot of church groups, a lot of busy moms, a lot of ministry opportunities. I've never failed to get answers for that. So if you ask, expect a lot of
Yeah, I think one of the uncomfortable things for single people is like if you're breaking new ground and you've got ideas about what you want to do, is how to make sure it's in sync with what's generally a married leadership of the church, appropriately, scripturally, that deacons and elders are like the men who lead the church. And so like being in sync with them and making sure, like, you know, I feel sometimes like whether I was here or in my other church even more, like, should I do this? Should I be doing it? Do I have authority to do this? I'd say like we're a little more timid than we should be. And I think trusting in the mercy of those around us to let us know what the limits are of what we do, and to accept correction when we step beyond those limits because we weren't sure and we went and did something and they're like, I think there is that uncomfortableness of wanting to be able to understand where leadership in the church comes from. I've not always been at peace with this, but I'm at peace with this about like leadership in the church is generally going to be married. And there are roles of leadership within the church, but broadly, there's lots of things to do. But trying to stay in sync with that leadership is an important question. I think women who want to come and ask questions sometimes feel even more intimidated about bringing these things up. And you got to overcome those barriers, please.
And church leadership needs to overcome those barriers, too, and make it a safe place for people to ask questions and open things up. My inclination is that the problem is more the church not having enough ministry than being able to separate ministries that are meaningful and productive for single people and married people and women and men. The big picture question is the church active in ministry? If the church is active in ministry, if the church has a lot of things that they're ministering to and doing with their time and energy and attention, there'll be plenty of place for everybody who needs something to do.
All right. We've touched on this a little bit, but there's a couple questions. Basically, how can a single lady best serve her church?
That's you, hon.
Got it. I think a lot of it comes into like figuring out, being comfortable exercising and figuring out what your giftings are. So for me, it's been the things that I naturally enjoy. And so a lot of that surrounded around helping moms and reaching out to people and getting involved both in church community and local community outside of church. But I think in a broader sense, I think women and all single people can serve the church. Like you have that ability to take some of that load off of married people. And I think it can easily, like a lot of the weight of like hosting people and making sure you're welcoming people into the church gets put on families, which I think is good. But single people also are able to take some of that. So I think the ability to host and to welcome people and to just be an active part of the church is available to anyone, especially single women. And I feel like I've seen a huge lack. We just don't have a lot of single women in our church. But huge need for single women that are wanting to serve the church.
The categories in the scriptures, you know, there's Paul's using Phoebe to send messages to the church. Women are providing for the needs of the church. Women are providing for the needs of the disciples when Jesus is traveling. There's a lot of opportunities for women. I think that what I found, there's not enough like creativity that's being we've kind of like closed off certain domains and kind of uncritically. Like we just don't think of women being involved in certain things. It's a good corrective to remember that the Bible is very gender progressive. Like the places where we find women in the New Testament are not common for their day. Like the Bible itself is very progressive about women being actively involved in things in ways that the world around her was not. And I think that, you know, we're in the 21st century post-feminist church. And so for a lot of us who are in the conservative wings of the church, we're trying to recapture, you know, traditional gender identity and distinctions between masculine and feminine, and preserve gendered roles in the church. And there's a lot at stake there, but it's causing us to be unbalanced in that we've lost connection with how progressive the first church was and how important the women were among the first disciples, that they were at the prayer meeting, that they were doing important things in the church. They were communicating messages back and forth between the apostles, that they were providing for the needs of the church in the case of Lydia.
And they were prophesying.
They were prophesying. Yeah. They had important ministries. They were providing for the poor. They were doing all kinds of things in the New Testament record itself. And so if we're not matching that, if we're not doing those things, we're not being biblical. Like, we can keep only men in our pulpits all for the rest of our lives, but we're not actually matching what the Bible says for us to do if our women are only covered to stay at home and take care of children. There are things for women to do. There's also a real potential synergy between married and single people when the church begins to express itself this way. For instance, with both Chloe and Jeff, my own ministry is hugely advanced by having access to single people that can work with me in my ministry. I mentioned my sermon the other day. I had gone out to Minneapolis when Laura lost her baby. There was a lot of ministry to do to that woman's heart that I couldn't do, and that Chloe was able to. Her mother couldn't go. She was pregnant to have babies of her own. But here I could take my daughter with me in a church planning capacity to minister to a grieving woman in ways that I couldn't do well. And it was beautiful, and it was necessary. Similarly, I'm in a lot of places a lot of times, and Jeff does a lot of front work and a lot of traveling and a lot of visiting to the churches that we're working with, and it makes so much more connection than I can do because of the constraints of my family. So Jeff is always flying out to see a church and going and visiting people and talking to people, and the balance between the two of our lives make something really, really strong for the church. And so this synergy between the married and the unmarried is a potentially really, really dynamic and strong thing.
One of my favorite examples, because I do think the biblical example's strong when you start looking for it, is I call Martha and Mary the original singles ministry, right? like there's no proof they're single, by the way, but they have a brother named Lazarus as well. Right, and so like this was Jesus' like home base outside of Jerusalem, mm-hmm. right? Walking distance, right? And this is where he spent his time before he came in and rode a donkey into Jerusalem for his last days. Apparently, the time was spent there, mm-hmm. and there was an incredibly close, bonded emotional relationship between Jesus and these women, and the other disciples, and these women, I believe.
Right.
And so, like, we can look right in the life of Jesus and in his ministry and see roles for single men and single women. Mm-hmm. It starts there and echoes as the New Testament continues.
And it starts with the description of calling each other brother and sister. Like, that's the root connection between all of us, whether we're married or unmarried. We're all brothers and sisters. And so how do you deal with single women in the church? Well, you deal with them like your sisters. How do you deal with single brothers in the church? You deal with them like your brothers. Like, there's an innate way of knowing, like, you know how you treat your brother, you know how you treat your sister, that's how you should be with them.
All right, I'm gonna open it up here, and we'll plan to go about maybe 5 minutes past since we got started a little bit late. And I know there's some questions on here that did not get addressed. And if you're like, my question didn't get asked, now's your chance. So, or it can be another question that you thought of. Go ahead, kick us off.
Okay, so how does the role of being single change when you're in courtship or in the time that you're engaged without marriage?
All right, so let me just quickly repeat the question. So how does the role of singleness change when you're in courtship?
Or does it change?
I've seen enough engagements end to say that you're single until you get married. I think there is, of course, in courtship and engagement, there's a general direction. But I don't know what you think. I've heard it said, like, you don't treat a woman as your wife until you're actually married. And there are a number of ways in which she submits herself to your headship in the vows of marriage before God that changes things.
Yeah, I have a message on this too that we also need to do a part two to on courtship and marriage. I think that, you know, there's certainly some cultural things about, you know, the way that groups of people make marriages and families within their communities, and so there's probably some mutability and variability about how to do those things. But I'm like Jeff. I think that there's a couple of things. Courtship is a space where you make a place for two single people to get closer to each other to decide if they should be a married couple. And so there is something unique about that space, but there's two things that are important to me with my children, is that one, it's you should engage with your non-negotiables very early on. Like, talk about the things that matter most to you before your heart is fully engaged in that courtship and relationship. Like, ask the hard questions on the front end while your mind and faculties are still fully present. Because later in the relationship, you lose touch of those things, and it's not. And when the problems come up, it's much, much more painful to deal with. It's better to find out, like, compatibility issues, and that we're a good fit for each other, and that we have the same goals and purposes in life, and the big non-negotiables are all in place before we're in love with each other and then having to rip each other apart. And we tend, among my family, and it's fairly common in the church, although not universal, to view physical touch the same way. That you shouldn't be touching somebody that's not your wife. That it's better to preserve those things for when you're married. Because a lot of courtships do break off and a lot of engagements come apart. And if you've been treating each other, at least in quasi ways, like you're married, but you're not, what does that look like if things don't work out well? And so I've seen it's much, much better to not be emotionally and physically engaged until you're sure this is the direction we're going.
All right. Go ahead.
You guys kind of talked about the question, but what do you think of, you know, Paul puts the necessity for this earthly concern on married men? Did you say that that's fulfilled with, like, a church that's adequately unified? Like, we're saying, like where you have to be concerned with the wife and children that maybe Chloe or Jeff could add where you can't give no attention?
Yeah, that's certainly the case. I mean, it goes across both genders. A married man and a married woman have to care for the things of this life, how they may please their spouse,
right,
and care for the children, all the other things that need to be done for married people. But yeah, it's certainly the case. That's what I'm talking about, that synergy. That there are certain things, you know, I think the requirement for marriage and raising children in the ministries, there are certain lessons that are only learned that way. There's, in a certain sense, the training ground for the deaconate and the bishopric are in a family. Like, that's where you learn how to do the skills that are required for those ministries and offices. And having done that creates the skill set to do that in the church. Else how shall they take care of the house of God is the way that requirement list ends. And so there is something to be learned in domestic life that isn't learned outside of domestic life. But there's also a lot of things that are gained on the other side of the equation. Time, capacity, energy, and, like, recklessness, like not having to provide for other people and care about certain things. Those two things. And then I think there's also something that happens on the flip side in the Christian community. Like, as people age and grow in the church, one of the hard things about being single is growing old and feeling some sense of loss and loneliness in your old age. If the Christian community is robust and full, it doesn't have to be the case on that end of the equation either. There are people who are there who can love and minister to their older brothers and sisters, who can hear from them, learn from them, gain, you know, they've lived a life with doing whatever things have been done in single ministry, and our young people care about those things. And so putting that back together on the other end of life is also a real blessing, potential blessing for the church to meet one another's needs. Dali? Oh, I'm sorry. I don't.
No.
Go ahead, Dali.
That says something about married man to live as if he was single, or as if he's not married? What does that mean?
I think he's referring to persecution. For this present distress, it's better to remain even as I am, he says. And persecution just ripped a lot of people apart. You can read lots of stories throughout whatever epoch you want, but particularly like behind the Eastern Bloc, behind the Iron Curtain in communist Romania and Russia, there's a lot of families ripped apart in horrible ways, and people who should have been living normal family lives had husbands in prisons and women in prison and all kinds of family dispossessed and orphaned, and there's a lot of misery that happened in domestic life because of persecution. I think that's what he's referring to there. That the distresses that come on the persecuted church make it preferable to be single because those pains are not exacted on your spouse or your children.
The reference was 1 Corinthians 7.
Do you want to read it? Make sure I'm talking about the right passage.
1 Corinthians 7:26 and following. I suppose, therefore, that this is good because of the present distress, mm-hmm. that it is good for a man to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be loosed. Are you loosed from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But even if you do marry, you have not sinned, and if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Nevertheless, such will have trouble in the flesh, but I would spare you. And then there's the next verse. But this I say, brothers, the time is short, so that from now on, even those who have wives should be as though they had none.
Go ahead. How imminent does persecution need to be for that to be in effect?
How imminent does persecution have to be? Any questions?
I'm not sure. It's hard to plan for persecution. I think it's a little bit, at least in Paul's case, it's responsive. Like, Paul is living in a persecuted church, and I think that where you see a persecuted church, you see a lot more of that kind of sentiment. I mean, if I was in a persecuted place, I'd be a lot more emphatic with my children, like, hey, it's really dangerous to be married right now. Like, you need to think about what it means to end up in prison for 16 years with a wife and a child outside. Like, that's, you can't neglect that when you're thinking about, I'm not saying you shouldn't, it's not, and that's what Paul says, it's not sin. But hey, there's a heavy price to be paid for people living in persecution and trying to raise families. I mean, it's all throughout the prophetic stuff too in Matthew 24. I'll
leave it there. Nate, you had a question?
Yeah, first of all, I want to say I very much appreciate being part of a church family that values being a single for God's kingdom and gives you the manhood and womanhood that you deserve if you exemplify a mature Christian life. I love that. I love the way that we give space for that. I love examples of you brothers being single for the kingdom in a good way. The other thing I'd like to throw out there is that family creates, it creates a space, a place where we are rounded out, where people interact with us. And I would like to throw that out there. If you're single, don't just live by yourself. Don't retreat. Don't withdraw. There's aspects of femininity and masculinity that we need in our life. And even for me, living with two other brothers in the same house, it's a good experience. It keeps me from becoming old and crusty and sarcastic.
Right.
It keeps the finer sensibilities of my life alive. I think that's valuable. And I've seen people that have not had that, and I worry about it.
Right.
Good word. Go ahead, Dominic.
What does it mean to burn with passion?
What does it mean to burn with passion?
All Dominic's questions we've been ignoring, but now.
He gets to ask them now, yeah? I mean, is it zelotes? Is that the word? Burn with passion, right? That's like zeal. Like, that's like the origin of the word is hot metal that's glowing hot. If that's your idea about like passion for marriage, then probably you should pursue it, or you're going to be really frustrated.
Right.
What's the deal with fathers deciding not to give their daughters in marriage?
What's the deal with fathers not giving daughters in marriage?
It's a prerogative of the ancient world. Like, you didn't marry without your father's permission. And so what happened, a lot of that part of the epistle is missed if you don't have a historical context for the church. What Paul's referring to is that because there's established orders of virgins and widows. I don't think that a lot of people are cognizant of this, but the early church set up orders of virgins and widows, and it was a place for the church to care for the physical needs of both single married and single women, single men and single women, especially younger and older, for all kinds of ministry in the church, and they were called the orders of virgins and widows. Later, Paul, in one of his letters, is saying, receive not a widow into the order unless she's of this age and of this quality. What he's talking about is, don't pay her rent and take care of her needs unless she's met these qualifications. And there was an exchange happening for the church. The church was saying, we value the prayers and the ministry of widows, so we'll care for your needs and you care for our spiritual needs. And that's the way you see that played out later in Hermas and some other places, that there's an exchange happening. We'll meet your physical needs, you meet our spiritual needs. That's how the church was viewing these orders of virgins and widows. And that was also a highly esteemed place. It was very, very valuable to the church to have those places. A lot of times the martyrs came out of those orders, and there's a high status in the church for the virgins and widows because they had dedicated their lives to the church. Later monasticism makes these things monks and nuns, but their original expression is in the orders of virgins and widows. So because this was a highly valued place in the church, and because fathers had authority to decide whether or not their daughters could marry a particular person, that was the status quo of the culture, some men were saying, I don't want you to get married, I want you to stay in the order of the virgins in the church. And Paul's giving tacit permission for that and saying it's not sin if they don't. And so he's saying, you can decide if you want your daughter to be in the order of the virgins. You have that prerogative, you can do it. But it's not sin for her to marry. That's what he's trying to clarify. So without the historical context, that all reads really confusing.
So why don't we have those orders anymore?
Well, I don't know that we shouldn't.
Who's we?
We, the church, the bride of Christ, the Christians, true believers.
So that can only, when I say who's we, I mean that can only happen in the context of a local community.
Right.
Right? That can't happen broadly.
Well, yeah, because the Catholics already do that still. Right. But I mean, I guess I'm talking about you guys here in Boston and your mid-Virginia and Minneapolis.
We don't have any widows yet.
Right.
we just don't. I think that time will come.
But you have virgins.
We do. Yeah, they stay busy so far, but I haven't had to pay the rent, so.
All right, Jeff has a book he wants to introduce here.
Yeah, so this book, I've read, this book is called Redeeming Singleness, How the Storyline of Scripture Affirms the Single Life by Barry Danilak. Maybe Clay can put a link to this so you don't have to just take it from here. This has been a book that has a theology of singleness, like this stuff we talked about in Isaiah, and a historical view of the elevation of marriedness in the Old Testament and how it changed in this idea of progressive grace. And then a lot in the New Testament with some things that talks about, for men particularly, like the idea of Paul and Timothy as father and son. There's a lot of really good stuff in this book, and so we'll get a link out to you. I would personally recommend this for reading to give you some food for thought and a biblical framework and some things to chew on, that it's not just ideas of men, but something that's rooted in the scriptures of the value of singleness in the Christian church as opposed to Jewish Old Testament times.
Excellent. Yeah.
You touched on this a little bit earlier, and I'm asking as a married man. I've had conversations before about natural distinctions, married, unmarried, old or young, with child, without child. I mean, it can be all sorts of things. It can be northerner, southerner, coffee, tea, whatever. that seem to naturally drive how we build relationships socially and even within the church. And it's been a source of pain in areas. And this seems related to that same subject, because there seems to be discussion about intentionality and how you include and interact with those, you know, married and single together. But more broadly, that can you, is there anything to add, I guess, on that intentionality in, within the community and relationship building?
So the distinction isn't the problem, the valuation is. The value constructs that are associated with those things. Like if you think of Northerners as bad or Southerners as dumb, like that distinction becomes a problem when it's a valuation. And so if we want to not have divisive identities within the church, then we need to see the value for these different places. And so valuing singleness properly and seeing how they fit and what they do within the church, valuing family properly and seeing what they do in the church, valuing our giftings. You know, it's a lot of my ministry last year has been preaching about spiritual gifts and how seeing each other for what you contribute that I don't, and how that meets the needs of the kingdom and the church and Christ, is an important way of establishing the value for my brothers and sisters, and seeing that I need them. And I think that the reason that I have developed the views that I have about the value of singleness, in spite of being a man who's very, very married, is that I have benefited over and over and over again from the ministry of single people. And so I feel two things from that, right? I feel grateful, like they're valuable to me. My brothers and sisters who are single are valuable to me. And I feel responsible, like I want to help meet their needs too. And so I try to have a very open home to my brothers and sisters who are single. I want them to be able to have a home-cooked meal and sit at a table with children and have the affection that is hard for them to find sometimes the rest of the parts of their life. And, you know, it's good, whether you're single or not, to have a little child that you're close to come and sit in your lap and look at a book with them. It just feels good for everybody. It's a human thing. It's not a married or single thing. And to have access to that really makes everybody whole. And so those are the ways that we're trying to keep distinction. The distinction's good. The values need to be in proper order.
All right, we're gonna wrap it there. Thank you, Matthew, Chloe, David, and Jeff for your input here and for your engagement. So I understand that the next, 50 minutes is dedicated.